Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. Maureen chats with a different guest each week about their sustainability activities and initiatives, from advice on tiny houses to rooftop gardens to wildlife-friendly farming practices. Maureen's guests are passionate individuals who are making a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Kia ora. Welcome to Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio. Ko Maureen Howard Ahau. I'm a sustainable practice educator based in Dunedin and host of this show. So this week on Eco Living in Action, I'm again going to be running the show in two sections. And in the first very short section, that I'm now calling the Eco Ideas section, I'll be sharing my thoughts on something that you might like to consider. While in the second section, the main section, I'll be chatting as usual to my guest, who this week is Stefan Roysenton from North East Valley, and he's talking about his straw bale home and masonry heater that are the perfect combination. So please listen in to that. So let's get on with the show. Now, on Eco Ideas this week, when I was small, a relative gave me a big red balloon filled with helium. And with that balloon bobbing over my head and its string tied to my wrist, it seemed obvious to me at the time that if the wind blew the right way and if I breathed in deep enough, that the balloon could take me places. Now, the right wind didn't come along, so obviously I didn't get lifted off the ground, but it was something that I imagined was very possible. And now as an adult, my head is again filled with imaginings of gaining altitude, but not in the usual way, you know, in the belly of a fossil-fueled aeroplane, but instead with something lower carbon, an airship that could even get me across oceans. Okay, I'm just going to wait a second now while you have your disaster thoughts. Okay, now, according to a now decade-old George Monbiot article, the UK Tyndall Centre for Climate Change Research calculated that travelling in an airship, even when it's powered by fossil fuels, will produce 80 to 90% less CO2 emissions compared with a flight in an aeroplane. Yes, it's slower, even with new designs that are able to travel at an average of 130 kilometres an hour, but still an airship could theoretically take people from Auckland to Sydney in 15 hours. So that's not too bad. But if the technology for airships doesn't stack up, you know, for safety or for cost reasons, what about other forms of low carbon oceanic travel, such as wind assisted passenger ships, where the technology seems a lot more certain? And with climate change bearing down on us, where are these low-carbon ships of all their various sorts? Unfortunately, in a world that often relies on the market to make change happen on any scale, we're still waiting for this particular market to appear. We could give it a hand. Now, I'm not a marketer, but it seems reasonable that if we can get 20% of the population excited about low-carbon forms of oceanic travel, maybe these technologies will get a chance to become a commercial reality. There's the fly less movement that's growing well overseas, and it's still small here in New Zealand, but it's growing. And I'd really love for us to get it behind this so that we can support low carbon options now for overseas travel that can then come into place in the near future. So I'm still dreaming, and at least, if not flying high, of flowing far over the ocean, and it's all in the range of the very possible. Now we'll move on to the main part of our show, where I interview a guest each week, and this week our topic is about building a straw bale home, its heat trapping capabilities, and how this can be very well combined with a masonry heater to release and capture radiant heat throughout the house over a long period. A masonry heater can also heat hot water. Now, to record the show, I went to the Straw Bell home of Stephen Roycenton and his family in North East Valley here in Dunedin. Their home isn't finished yet, but it's already looking beautiful. It's warm and the family are living in it. This show was recorded on the 10th of March 2019.
I felt a great, remarkable warmth when I came into the house, I must say.
Yes, it is an overcast day and it's still nice warm from yesterday.
It is, because it's quite cold outside today.
Yeah, and it's getting there.
Yeah, but so where was that warmth from? So
I think it's stored in the thermal mass of the house, and as you've seen, the walls are quite thick, so we have straw bales in between that keep the warmth, well, outside if it's really hot during the last couple of summer days, and it keeps it inside once it's in. And we have, which you see, well, you haven't seen that, but the big masonry wall in the back is a concrete block wall, as another heat storage within the house.
So living in, you're originally from Germany.
From Germany, yep.
And you've
yep.
come over with your family.
Yeah.
And you've decided that, I guess you had a bit of a dream, didn't you, to live in a straw bale house. This hasn't been a momentary idea.
No. That's probably 15 years that I've been pondering about it and looking at what people have done. And friends of my parents had one, and that was the first time years ago that I walked into it. And I really liked the atmosphere inside, and it is and on top of that, it is probably what do I want to say, a greener way of building, using straw and things like that, and mud, taking mud and straw and a bit of water and sand and making your house out of it. So that has appealed to me, and I've done a lot of research in how to do that, and this is the not yet final result, but we're halfway through, so it's nice to live here.
It's quite a big house.
Yep. it is not a tiny house, and I think we don't have a tiny family, so we're a family of five, three kids and the two of us, and I pondered about it, but I think for the lifestyle at the moment that we have with those three kids, we wanted to have some space, and it's not massive, but it's not tiny. I admit that. Yes,
and it's quite interesting because you know you've got the ground floor pretty ready.
Yeah.
But the upstairs, it allows you to kind of live in one part of the house while you get the other.
Yes,
fixed,
we do. And I think the kids at the moment all reside in the office. Well, in the future office, they have a bunk bed and a normal trundle in there, and that's fine. And Simon and I sleep on a mattress in the back of the lounge. And we still have enough space. And it's a night, well, the living space is big enough for us to do that. And it's just, I think it's a luxury to have that kind of space, and we really cherish it. It's nice.
So a lot of the work is being done by you?
Yes, I've done a lot of that work. I had builders and contractors who helped me to put the nitty-gritty up, like the frame and the blockwork and the concrete poured. Obviously wasn't me. But I then, with friends, put in the straw bales, put the mud plaster on. I did a lot of the internal timber work, and I had a friend who is a qualified builder and a really good plasterer last year in April when we wanted to move in to help me finish it. So he was here for several months to finish the downstairs to the to the finish that you see at the moment.
Yeah, it is. It looks lovely. Already it
yes.
does. So, and to take on such a big enterprise, you know, a lot of people would perhaps dream of a straw bale house, but not actually do it. But for you now, you have come with certain skills to the job, haven't you? You've got a background sort of in physics, isn't it?
I have, yes. Well, my background is engineering. I'm an engineer by trade. I have worked for different companies in the engineering sector. And I have also studied after that a combination of physics or all the sciences, engineering and biology. The background that I've got also is from my dad building stuff with him, helping him. While he's not a builder, he's a jack of all trades. And this is somehow in my blood as well.
Right.
And it's quite cool. Yeah.
So, he's brought you up to kind of fix things and make things.
And to use my hands and at the same time to use my brain, learning from others. And like I said, this is not my idea. I designed it. But this is a work of many hands. And literally, I had like the builders doing the structural work, but I had a lot of friends helping me putting the straw bales in or coming for a weekend to help me plaster and things like that.
Right.
And they've enjoyed it. It's because it's something completely different.
Yes.
It's playing with mud and the final result that you have a house to live in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's not everybody's piece of cake, I have to say, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Okay, so there's a few things that I've seen about this house. So, you know, coming in, you know, well, for a start, it was warmer. but also, you know, I was very curious to know if you had added concrete, you know, to a lot of people add concrete to the external surface over the straw bales mm-hmm. as a mix in with the mud because they're a little bit nervous. You haven't done that, have you?
No, I haven't. And based on what I've read so far, you shouldn't. Yes, you want to keep the mud on the wall, and this is why once the veranda is built outside, we're going to have what's exposed of the clay covered with lime. So that means that the rain or driving rain can't wash it off. I have clad most of the house, especially on the second story, in macrocarpa. So basically the rain can't get there. That means it doesn't have to have any extra protection in terms of cement or lime. So
did you do that partly for a weight thing? No, I
did it for aesthetics reasons. And living in Dunedin, we do have a better climate and we do sometimes have driving rains. While we are tucked in here in Northeast Valley, we do get the northeasterly.
And so is that so that if it was on the straw bales on the ground floor that you can repair it, you can reach it and repair it easily?
That's yes. And the other thing is peace of mind. Like a piece of wood with a gap in between. That's what the council wanted as well. So in hindsight, they wouldn't even have allowed me to have the whole second floor plastered, mm-hmm. talking to the inspectors then while we went through the consent process.
Yeah.
And
you had an engineer's report, didn't you, to try and get it? Because you're doing something a little bit different
While I have designed it and the ideas are evolved from talking to friends and with my partner Simone, the final product that went to council, the paperwork, was worked through by an architect. So it's done by an architect, the plans, and then they're handed in to the council here.
So It is great that you've got the mud plaster on, but there's the other thing that's of interest in your house is also the masonry heater. Tell us what that is.
So you have a fire that has a lot of masonry around it. That means once you light the fire, it takes, in our case, 2 to 3 hours for the actual outside of the fire to warm up. Because the heat is not instantly, like if you have your steel firebox, it takes 2 minutes and it's hot on the outside. But that masonry slowly, very slowly, he warms up, taking the heat out of the flue gases, and that takes a while. But that's actually what we wanted, because while the straw bale house is warm, we do have to have some source of heating during the wintertime, not during the summertime and during the in-between, but during the wintertime we do, and it's quite nice to have that slow transfer in heat within the masonry heater combined with the thick insulation and the thermal mass of the walls and the block wall that I said that is basically part of the living space.
Right.
So it's not quick, but actually that's what you want. Like if the house has 20 degrees, it'll have maybe overnight it'll go down to 19.5, but it doesn't go down to 15.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's the nice one. And the same during the summer, like when we had the hot days, it wouldn't go up to 27. Well, it would in the end if you open all the doors and had that in, but it's still nice and not cool, but warm and not hot.
Right.
So it works quite well together to have thick walls and a lot of earth plaster that has a thermal mass as well, and that masonry heater that is a slow-moving heat anyway.
Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with one, it looks like you've kind of got it fairly centrally in the middle of your house, haven't you?
Yep. It's the heart of the house, basically, literally, and it radiates. So the thing is, the fireboxes that we normally have here in New Zealand create convection heat. So we warm up air, it has some radiation as well, but most of it is warming up air, and this air is circulating around in your room. That one has almost no convection heat because the outside of the heater is going up to 40, 50 degrees, depending how hot we make it, how often we put another load in. And it's the radiating heat, so basically the one that you get from the sun, or when you stand next to a brick wall once the sun has gone down and the brick wall is still radiating that back to you, that's the heat that you get. and it's a really nice heat. Or you sit on top of it.
Yeah.
You can sit on top of the heater. Yeah. It's not, yeah, like it's
so,
not 200 degrees.
So you've
degrees.
Got your firebox, and all around it, it's kind of within a big square block,
yes,
isn't it?
It's a big
and
square block.
And that is
block.
The masonry, yeah, which, yeah, absorbs all that. And it's made of kind of concrete or something similar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a refractory brick, so fire bricks.
It
can keep the heat a little bit longer, and it doesn't really, because concrete or any material will expand when you heat it up and will contract again, and it can do that a lot longer without falling into bits.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's got pipes, water pipes going through it?
It has a water jacket, like the fireplace itself has
so
a water jacket.
So a bit like a wetback system?
It is a wetback, yeah. It is a wetback system. And that wetback system heats up our hot water cylinder, which sits in the back, and that provides us with warm water.
Did you have to have those water pipes in it as part of the system, or is that something that,
no,
that could be done without?
Perfectly fine without it.
Yeah.
But we wanted one that, well, basically we wanted to keep the cost and therefore the energy consumption of the house as low as possible. And that means that we wanted to get some hot water from somewhere without using electricity. So during the summertime, we have solar panels, hot water solar panels on the roof. And then during the wintertime, we light the fire, and that fire is giving us enough water to have a hot shower or to have 10 hot showers if we want to.
Right.
Like it's the problem that we sometimes have during the summertime that we have too much hot water because the solar panels, you can't really shut them off. You don't want to have them boiling on the roof. So I've built a little outside radiator at the moment, temporary one. But later on, I would like to have a bench at the deck that you can basically heat. So Dunedin is not hot, but Dunedin is nice enough to sit outside when you have a warm bum.
And that's true.
And that's the plan later on, to get excess heat just outside.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be very popular by the end of this.
Yeah,
visiting you.
Yeah, and my friends encouraged me to have a pool outside or a little spa.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Right, so one thing I'm interested in, because I'm very attracted to straw bale houses, partly because... it's about using local materials. We're actually using things that have been grown here. So I was wondering, you don't see straw bales around the place everywhere. They're a little bit in short demand, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are not if you know the right people. So they have the big ones at the moment. I don't know, they're 2 meter by 1 meter.
Yeah.
And you need a big loader to handle them. But talking to other straw bale house owners here, which have become friends of mine, they directed me just over the hill to Palmerston, and there's still a farmer that does the little ones. And I think they are 1 meter by 450, so 1 meter by half a meter, and you can handle them, just manhandle them. And they came on a truck.
And do you turn them, have you turned them on their side, or are they flat on the ground?
Like they are on the side. So,
on the side,
yes.
Yeah.
So the walls are not quite as wide as they could be. But then I have heard that it's actually the same thermal performance. So if you talk in R value, it doesn't matter which way you put it, because even though it's smaller, it's going against the way the straw actually sits in the bale.
Yes. Whereas the little air holes would be going right through the other way.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what people say. And actually, it doesn't really matter. I know that we wanted to match the roof insulation with the R value of the bales, and this sits. I know that the roof insulation is somewhere between 4 and 5 and 6.
Right.
So I'm not sure what system the R value is calculated with, but at the end of the day, I'm not too fussed about it. It's warm, it works.
And then also, I guess, with the... So you've got that as an insulator, but then combined with the clay mix,
which is the thermal mass
going against it, you've got something that's really holding the heat, haven't you?
I think the thing is not just the insulation, but the key is, and we said that with the masonry, is the thermal mass that you have in the house. And it has about 40 mil of plaster on either side, and that is tons and tons of clay.
You got your straw from
From Palmerston.
Where did you get the clay from?
The clay, the first lot of clay came from a friend of mine from Clyde as well, because he had a source and knew that it had worked there. And I didn't have too much experimenting to do, so it just came on a big loader and dumped it. The second load, then from my friend in Whitehuddy, inspired to use local one, came actually from Whitehuddy. Somebody had drilled holes for his piles, and that stuff was perfect. And it's actually better clay here in Dunedin than it is in Central. So, yep, I've evolved, and the clay is really rock hard. It's better clay here, and that is now the outside, and we're doing the upstairs with that local clay.
Right, that's great. So it's a little bit of serendipity, isn't it? You know, to find who's dug down, got some available.
Yeah,
and in a way, you're doing them a favor too, aren't you? You're taking it away, and
yeah, they land. That is true. That is true. Yeah. But it's not like I'm taking truckloads. It's a little bit. And then you mix it with the straw that I still have from building the straw walls, and sand. And sand comes from the quarry around the corners one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of this, you know, we've got into the habit of almost all modern houses now are built with a lot of concrete, firstly on a concrete pad.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then a lot of concrete, and obviously you've had to use some, but not in the most of your house, have you?
No, we made the conscious decision to have no concrete pad because, for two reasons. I wanted to have warm feet, and in the last rental where we lived, there was a little patched hole where the sink was, and as I was, I'm the one who's doing the dishes, I had 1 foot on the wooden floor and 1 foot on the concrete patch. And guess what? The concrete is cold. If you don't heat the concrete is cold. So I wanted to have a wooden floor. And then it wouldn't make sense from a thermal perspective to basically insulate the thermal mass underneath with a wooden floor on top. So therefore the concrete wasn't really something we wanted. And on top of it, like you said, it's not really the best material in terms of environmental impact.
It's around 7%, I think, of all of our greenhouse gas emissions comes from concrete.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, so, of our global. So it's
I couldn't build without it, but we have just got a ring foundation in the pyramid of the house, and then the rest is suspended on the joists. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's less concrete, but it's still there. Yeah.
Yeah. So someday, a long time in the future, when you're long gone, and I'm long gone, there'll be a little ring of concrete.
There will, yeah.
But really, there won't be that big pad covering up.
And a heap of compost in between.
And a heap of compost. Probably there'll be a lot of maybe nice vegetables growing out of
maybe.
The middle of it.
We'll see what happens, yeah.
So, Stefan, it's nearly 2.5 years.
Not quite, but almost,
Yeah, that you've, from the starting of this huge project, and you also work full-time.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's a juggling act, but that's what it is. Yeah.
So I guess a lot of your free time really, or pretty much all your free time has been doing this.
Well, I have a deal with Simona that one day during the week I have off, and one Saturday or Sunday I have off as well.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But other than that, I'm chipping along a couple of hours every day and a full day on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but it's quite livable now in the downstairs.
Oh, it's fine. Yes. Yes.
And so we'll. Are your plans to kind of slow down a little bit at the moment?
I have, when we moved in, slowed down a little bit, but upstairs needs to be finished.
Yeah.
I've kind of made a promise to my daughter Hannah that she will have a bedroom on her birthday, and that's half a year to go. So pressure's on, and I'm planning on having it done by then. Yes.
Right.
So we have, it might not be finished, might not be a door, might be a curtain like downstairs.
Yeah.
But to have something that is semi-finished, livable, and I can slow down a little bit. Yes, because it is a huge impact on our family life and on my life, on everybody's life.
Mm.
It's comfortable to live here, but I think the next part will be to have more time, maybe do one day during the week work and one weekend and have the rest more family time.
Yeah.
Because while this is I'm enjoying it, it's an enjoyable project for me, I do see the point that can't go for it. It can't go on forever. I think I see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's there, and a house is always something to do, but it depends how much you have to put in.
Yeah.
And that has to get a little bit less.
Yeah. Well, all the best. Anyway, it's great. Yeah. And it's a great inspiration for us all, really. You know, it's good to have these examples of people doing straw bale in Dunedin, because, you know, there's still people who think it's too wet here. But you are showing that that's not the case.
Yeah, it can be done. And like I said, it's. I think this is one of the 10 houses before have been built in Dunedin. So it's 1 out of 10 or even more that I know of. And that's really inspiring, and I like it. But it takes a fair bit of tenacity and optimism and maybe blissful ignorance of what's to come in terms of workload when you get into that project. But yeah, I can recommend it.
And thank you for listening to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, and my guest today on this show was Stefan Roysenton from North East Valley, and we were talking about straw bale homes and the wonderful things that he's done that's helping his straw bale home to be warm with a masonry heater. Now, if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. Eco Living in Action is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. So thanks for listening, and hope to catch you next week.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.
Liberation and